This video is brought to you by Astaprobe.
John, I think it's time to start the Crimson Sky.
Ready as I'll ever be.
We've heard about this for quite a while. It's time.
Let's do this. Okay. Andrushige. How are you doing? How are you doing over there?
I'm sorry, did you say something?
Oh my God. Don't know. I don't even know. Did I say anything? I'm still in a daze, man.
Yeah. What an array of emotions that episode. Like, you think, like, oh my God, yes. I'm so relieved to see Ishiro. Thank God. Which I never thought I'd say, by the way.
Take us out with salvation. Yeah, which, right?
Yeah, seriously. And then that happens. First of all, the acting on the show is so damn powerful, which we have said several times. Yeah. I want to right now, I'm going to say this first. I have not watched any of the other shows, but I think it's just right now. Let's just give Anna Sawai the Emmy. Okay.
Sure.
She deserves it.
Sure.
She is so damn, her acting, her character, it's the emotions she was able to invoke in me. Just, I love the way they started out with her character. We get that flashback with her and Alvito, and like she was already, I mean, she didn't want to, I mean, we've seen several times and just like her questioning, like why she's still alive and why she doesn't want to be alive anymore. Mm-hmm. And then again, I just love that flashback and like that, you know, how much she embraces her faith. And I just thought that was such an impactful moment, just seeing, you know, that introduction to Alvito. Mm-hmm. And that they have a bond with each other, you know, despite like all the things that are going on with the Catholic Church and all that stuff. But like there is a bond there between the two of them. So I'm glad we got to see that and a little bit of a backstory with him. Mm-hmm. That music he was kind of singing for her, like it really touched me.
Singing like a hymn.
Yeah, it was just so damn beautiful and sad at the same time. I mean, I'm really getting emotionally worked up right now just thinking about it. But I usually don't get emotional during the review portion of the episode, but just thinking about this episode, like it was such an array of emotions. There was so much going on. Again, there was that whole sequence where she was just talking about the lineage of her family, about being a samurai? Or
yeah,
a warrior,
I come
or not?
From like a long line of samurai.
That was really, again, just impactful. It's why, I mean, it wasn't just the whole scene of her, of what happened at the end there. It was just, again, it was an array of the, of all the 9 episodes we've been through with her, with through Bentaro, her allegiance to Toranaga, her faith, just the acting from Anna Sawai in general. I mean, just, it's one of my favorite. I know it's fresh and, you know, I might be a prisoner of the moment, you know. Ooh. Shoot me if you want, but this
prisoner
one,
of the moment.
This is one of my favorite television characters I've seen in quite a while. I mean, she was incredible. And I just like, again, from the relief I felt when Ishido came to, I'm like, yes to this. I'm like, no. I mean, it was done in a satisfying yet emotional way, and I just have no words. I'm just so damn sad. John, what do you got, buddy?
I mean, I'm thrilled personally.
Yes, I could see you were smiling, you were laughing, you were cracking
up.
Where's your humanity, sir?
TV, all right.
Well, they said The Martian was a comedy, so this could be a comedy as well.
Oh, I will be very upset if they category fraud this into some comedy. I mean, like, give it the awards, but also like, no, I completely echo everything you just said. This is a fascinating show because it remains in a way remarkably consistent and unified within its themes while continuing this, what feels like this just, you know, upward trajectory towards, you know, the breaking point of tension. And I was reminded of something she said, Mariko said, like early on in the show to Blackthorn about, you know, our maze of etiquettes or whatever it is, or our sort of, like our labyrinth of customs and things like that. And I mean, so much of the show has been about, you know, watching people have these sort of kind of double speak, you know, debates of sorts, and yeah, watching, you know, the juxtaposition of action versus reality. You know, like, there's so much about, like, are we prisoners? Are we hostages? Are we free to go? And even within that little thing, there are so many levels and layers that keep you from, you know, just being able to directly acknowledge what the situation is. And yeah, seeing this episode, again, another one without Toranaga, you know, the guy for whom so much of this, you know, all of this hinges on, the guy who is sort of the spearhead of all this change and upheaval that is happening here and now, you know, to spend yet another episode sort of away from him as everything comes to a head. I do not know what to expect in the 10th episode, because part of me often sort of thinks that, you know, when you're watching, especially a show like this, you know, 8 or 10 episodes, you know, the penultimate episode to me is often where you'll see, like, you know, a lot of the physical conflict resolved, a lot of the physical stakes will boil over, and, you know, if there's some kind of big battle to happen, that's when it'll be. And then, you know, the last episode might finish some of that off and then do a lot of the emotional wrap-ups and stuff. But watching this, I'm like, it seems like things can only get crazier next episode. And it seems like there have been so many breaking points and points of no return, or what feel like points of no return. And now it really feels like we've crossed a point of no return. And now it really feels like it or not, Crimson Sky in some way, shape, or form is coming to pass. And I appreciate that, you know, this episode is called Crimson Sky. And certainly this isn't just like a straightforward siege, you know, like, there's so much, again, about, you know, they're making the procession to Osaka and then, you know, appealing to Ishido with Yabushige and Blackthorn and all that stuff. And then Monaco coming in and basically being like, you know, our Lord is taking his time to grieve, you know, as agreed, we are here, but I need to go back and I need to take his women with me. And that seemed like pretty much the first stone thrown. And it feels to me like this is the kind of situation where, yeah, it'll almost take like a toppling over of these, you know, dominoes of etiquette and protocol before, like, we really get into physical even in that, like, scene where she is forcibly attempting to exit and doing that chicken game of, you know, you're either going to kill my you know, entourage here, there's a better word for that, but either way, you're going to kill, you know, my little, you know, group of people here, or you're going to let me go. And even that, you know, as much as that is like a fight and there are weapons and it is a bloodbath pretty much by the end of it, or at least it's, you know, a big loss of life. And again, those sequences are not the majority of what we're seeing, but they always wring the greatest tension out of them. And even in something like that, just, you could feel the mess of everyone sort of making decisions in the moment of, like, whether or not to pertain to the greater call and the greater understanding of, again, the makeup of our society versus, you know, just kind of stepping up and doing, you know, kind of what your impulse tells you or what your instinct tells you. And I love that you have, in a moment like that, Blackthorn's up above. There's not as much he can do. But in certain other scenes, you know, he, I think, exemplifies in a lot of ways. Obviously, he comes from a culture where you can bust into a situation. And I thought even that they used really effectively here.
Because I completely agree.
When you think he's going to, you know, try and take control by busting into a situation, he doesn't necessarily. And in other situations, you know, where you think he's going to back somebody up, he maybe does kind of offer the dissenting voice or the sort of, like, wake up, like, you know, why don't we do such and such and such a thing? And yeah, to have it all culminate, to have it, you know, to have Mariko hang in the balance of so many moments and situations across this episode. And again, we have seen the push and pull and the struggle of her grief and the mantle that she has begrudgingly been forced to carry along. And like, just like the amount of tension they wrung out of this in all these different moments where you're like, when is it going to happen? Is it going to happen now? I was like, every time we got to a point with her where life was on the line, I thought it could be that moment.
Yeah.
And you know, even up till the very end of the episode. And then right there, you're like, ah, okay. But especially if Ishido is just turning the guns on everybody in the city and you know, sending out, I forget what the group of assassins is called, but sending them in to start, you know, picking people off. You know, she does, I think, I mean, I don't know exact, they'll know because I assume, you know, the other people in this little warehouse, some of them, obviously, Blackthorn and Yabushige probably will make it out of there. So, like, somebody will know and it will be known that, you know, her death at the hands of Ishido did come to pass. And either way, the conflict is fully boiled over now.
Right. And to your point, too, you know... incredible character development from me, Blackthorn.
Absolutely.
Just in terms of like when he's coming to second her, like, I mean, obviously, like, if had that been in an earlier episode, obviously we know there's a connection. He's very affectionate towards her. By the way, can you confirm for us, was that her or another course? Just kidding aside. No. But seriously, like, we know that he obviously deeply cares for her and vice versa. And had that been an earlier episode where he, you know, he hasn't ingratiated himself into the Japanese culture and learned about honor and duty and all that, he might have just broken up that situation, as you were saying, and just like tried to stop her.
Yeah.
But he understood the gravity and weight of the situation that, like you said, while we were reacting, it's bigger than him and bigger than them. So, you're good.
Because it is one of those things, too, where it is like a sign of how the love, respect, and affection has truly grown, because it made me think of that scene with Buntaro, where Buntaro is like, let's protest what Toranaga's doing by, you know, leaving here and now. Let's end our lives here. And, you know, and he has kind of a selfish, I mean, there is an honorable reason, or at least a bigger picture reason, that he wants to do that. But I feel like there is also kind of a selfishness in that he is her husband. She is his wife. They have this wedge between them of coldness. And, you know, that moment is left off with, you know, his, you know, I assume his heart just that much more broken. Whereas here it's like, you know, Blackthorn offers that proposal. I assume that's basically just a proposal of marriage, basically. Yeah. Just like, would you live for me? And when she refuses that, then the fact that he steps up as what I took as sort of like an act of love, basically, of like, well, let me be the one. I don't want you to suffer. And the way we learned what seconding is, you know, and, like the way that they taught us that over the course of the show and then brought it back here, I thought it was really
and
graceful.
Obviously we saw Buntaro, and I believe it was the last episode, do that to Hiromatsu.
Yeah.
And again, Buntaro, I know you and I were not or at least myself, I'll speak for myself, I was not the fondest critic of him, you know, in terms of his behavior towards Mariko, and not realizing, okay, she was obviously very cold towards him. And, you know, but again, it's a complicated history. But semantics aside, I think that that's quite a lot for him, too, when he finds out what happened to Mariko. I mean, he had to second his father in the last episode. And now he's going to find out about Mariko, what happened there. I mean, that's quite a lot of weight to and emotion to, you know, that he's going to have to deal with, especially coming into, I would presume, is going to be a very big battle on Osaka. So,
and I'm like, where is Toranaga?
But you know what? You know? Yeah, but
not in the sense that like, oh, we need to see him now. I'm like,
right.
He's probably somewhere different than I expect him to be.
Right, of course. But you know, again, the show always does a good job when someone is not there, whether it be Toranaga or Ishido. You can always feel them somewhere hovering. Not obviously physically. I just mean like,
no,
exactly. You always feel them there. I think that. But yeah, just also too, again, just the power of the acting of these incredible actors. That scene with Mariko and Ochiba.
Great scene.
Was like one of the first times, at least, that I can remember. Again, we do these week to week, so it's hard to sometimes recollect all our memories and thoughts here. But That was one of the first times I can remember seeing Ochiba really vulnerable. Like, yeah. she's always in control yeah. of her emotions, always in charge. And, like, seeing her vulnerable and crying like that, I was like, damn.
Yeah, you see how thin the lines have truly become. And it's like we had that whole thing in the previous about her, you know, marrying Ishido and right. securing, you know, some kind of future for her son, the heir, that way.
Yes.
And yeah, seeing the bond they shared as girls come back here. And like, there's so many striking scenes between just the women characters when they are secluded from everybody else.
Yeah.
And that, you know, kind of is among them of those kind of striking moments of yeah. yeah of different kind of strength, different kind of vulnerability, and yeah, you can just feel the yearning and the fact that Ochiba has to like turn away to hide the tears, you know, and she's they're both arguing their ideology, and it seems certainly that Ochiba, at least as of the previous episode, is sort of like, well, it seems like Ishido has the upper hand here. But at the same time, you know, I wonder what her ultimate allegiance will be, because I, you know, this arrangement she has now is, yes, there is some spite to, you know, the legacy and you know, the fate of the Taiko and the whole situation surrounding the Taiko and all that stuff and you know, the previous regime and everything with Mariko's history, all that stuff aside, though, you know, you feel just like the two friends, yeah. you know, from underneath all of these other concerns, well, you know, from back when all that's above your head, you know? And, yeah. And yeah, I loved getting those little beats and moments and watching the tension in the big meeting where she is there and she is speaking, but also so is Ishido. And yeah, just watching all the different tensions is continually fascinating. Yeah,
unless we not forget, I'm also really looking forward in the next episode to getting the return of Fuji. I've really missed her.
I know! No Fuji!
The last two episodes, I mean, we've seen her, it feels like a total of maybe 30 seconds.
It's my only complaint.
Yeah, if there is one to be made, but I would agree with you. I mean, because we saw her, like, you know, doing some hand-to-hand stuff, just getting ready. I would say that's a foreshadowing, I guess, for us. But, yeah, and obviously we know she's got a major bond and connection as well with Mariko. So
she's going to ride in like AON well, this
also
week.
Also, too, like,
I am no man.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Hiromatsu, being her grandfather, like he was saying, like, now you have a different purpose in life after her husband and her son, the lineage was yeah. wiped out. Excuse me. We know that Mariko played a big part in like just keeping her sanity and like, you know, when she had to take care of just in general, like mentally and all that. So like this is going to be a very big loss for her. And I feel like she's going to have some big hero moments in the next episode, some badass epic moments. So I'm looking really forward to that. But like I said, this is one of the most epic emotional episodes I have TV I've watched in quite a while. I mean, it was suspenseful. There was so much tension. It was just literally on the edge of my seat. And then like finally, once I got my own catharsis of relief, I was like, yes. And then like the show ripped my heart out again. I was like, it's one of the best written episodes of TV I've experienced in quite a while. I mean, again, all these episodes are freaking amazing. This whole storyline and the acting and the mm-hmm. characters, the development, being on the edge of your seat. If you didn't read the book or watch the old series and not knowing what's going on, of course, I'm sure even if you did that, this is still very good too. But us being novices, like, it's really extra exciting. But yeah. this is
and just been, as a lover of good cinema,
yeah,
this you know, is, like to see really, something that's continually so yeah. well written and so well produced and so well and thoughtfully acted
yeah.
and directed and all yeah. that stuff. Like the compassion of the eye of the show is always fascinating.
Yeah. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring us. So some fun facts about me. I've been seeing an ENT the past couple of months. Got a CT scan done for my allergies, and right now I'm trying to find time to get deviated septum surgery. So like many of you, I am someone who's tried pretty much every nasal spray you can think of because I have difficulty breathing through my nose, which leads to day-to-day and sleeping problems on a consistent basis. So before agreeing to this, I wanted to try them out myself because this is a serious thing I deal with. They provided me with free samples. This is my second bottle. This is without a doubt the best nasal spray I have ever used. That's not some talking point. That's my very own personal testimony. Genuinely, for me, it's fantastic and lives up to how it's advertised. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter solution available. It gets to work in just 30 minutes while other sprays take hours to kick in. It's also the only one out there that's steroid-free for 24-hour relief. Astapro has seriously changed the game for me, offering full prescription strength relief from nasal congestion, runny nose, and sneezing. The difference this makes is phenomenal. It's kind of insane how this relief through my breathing and nostrils just kicks in and I'm back in action really fast. So if you're like me, battling with nasal allergies and looking for relief, get fast-acting nasal allergy or symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go. It's faster with Astapro, bro. I saw that commercial. Astapro, it's faster, bro. That's A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Remember, use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Thank you again, Astapro, sincerely.
And like John Blackthorne, you know, I know he always make the jokes that because I imitate his voice, but I've really grown. I mean, I've always appreciated Japanese culture, and I know this is obviously fiction. It's not a true story. I know. I fell for that with Fargo. Sue me.
Oh, but no.
It's based on a true story, just saying. Anyways, point I'm making is this show has really given me a deep appreciation of Japan. And again, we got one more episode, but just in general, it's like John Blackthorne. It's given me a deep appreciation of Japanese culture, of honor and duty and, you know, different things and different cultures and all that. And so I really appreciate it for that as well. So,
yeah, I mean, it gives you a little bit of both, you know, it's like it gives you this big appreciation for just the nature of the time and place this is in. And yeah, I mean, there is that side of, you know, the grace and the philosophy and the honorability and whatnot. But there's also, I think, just like an interesting compare and contrast that you can do across all of history, because every culture and society has its own relationship to etiquette and, you know, the group versus the individual and what protocols lie between all those things. And even here too, mm-hmm. the way you're weighing the hierarchy of, you know, are you faithful to a ruler? Are you faithful to a religious ideal or a deity? Are you faithful to, you know, are you a student of trade or whatever? I think as Kiyama said, you know, and all those, and that's also stuff that has been, you know, sort of here at the, has been part of all this from the get-go. And I love that they continually, you know, wrap the show in those themes. And two, you know, as much as, you know, we've maybe, you know, in the show's perspective, obviously, you have every kind of reason to be like, ah, these Catholics, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I trust them. But I have really also come to appreciate a character like Alvito, because
I completely agree with you there.
Yeah, because you get that brief moment here where you just get that tonal prologue where she's out, she's alone, it's desolate, it's a blizzard. And he is among the people who finds her. And he, in that moment, I assume, you know, kind of opened her world to, you know, whatever his version was of the grace of God that he, you know, sort of, you know, communicated unto her there. And the way that character certainly has certain conniving motivations and is certainly, you know, part of a bigger system of expansion and conquest, you know, carried out by the church. I do love the gray of a character like that, because when his presence throughout an episode like this is almost all benevolent, and it does remind you that as easy as it is to be cynical about all these things that can, you know, overcomplicate and exacerbate human, very, very human conflict, there is also the beauty in, again, the sharing in a rite or a ritual or, just that together acknowledgement of, you know, your soul and what you hope might happen once you leave. And then the entanglements of, like, it's a mortal sin to, you know, end your own life. And what do you do about that? Right. But you have a duty, and it's, then there are laws. And it's constantly fascinating, and it manages to do all that stuff without ever sacrificing, again, the atmosphere and just the, you know, humanity of everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great thing, is there are almost no sort of black and white, you know, cookie cutter type characters. And two, I mean, like the half brother, we see him throughout this episode. He didn't really speak much at all.
Right.
And I'm still sitting over here like, I can't tell. Like, is he just keeping quiet and playing the role, or is he really just in with them?
Yeah, I was thinking that too throughout the episode. Is it all part of the plan? And then also Yabushige, we saw like the first few episodes, he's is he the opportunist, which he was, like he was going back and forth between, you know, with Ishiro and with Torunaga. And I love too, right after Mariko had the whole mic drop moment, he's like, what's the plan? Involve me. Like, come on. I knew you're up to something. And then like,
and even that, I'm like, is this a test? Yeah, is this still a test for Yabushige?
Exactly. Like, you know? But then once like Ishido said he accepts you, like, I guess joining his ranks or being a part of, like, he's like, oh, okay. And then like, nope. It's like, no, it's honor and duty to Torunaga. And damn. Again, good. Well, I mean, it
certainly
seems
like,
I mean,
in these latter episodes, seems like Yabushige is pretty much Torunaga, but this show has taught me like to never be too sure.
You're 100%. I'm not saying
I hope
you're,
he is.
I'm not saying you're wrong. You're absolutely right. It could throw a twist. This show, I mean, never ceases to amaze me with twists and turns. 100%. It's just everything we saw him do.
Yeah.
And then like, especially what he did with, Ishido's guy there at the end, and then like warning them. I'm not saying it's not gonna happen, but I'd be shocked if he ends up with Ishido. But again,
oh god, and those little moments where he and Blackthorn are like talking to each other and they can like kind of understand each other.
That was
like,
that was awesome. I so love those interactions where they were understanding like every fourth or fifth word. And it's funny too, because I have one of my best friends is deaf, and I speak sign language, as many of you know. So as I was first learning, I was like, I could only understand like a couple words. So I was like so relating to that. So I was like, yes, I understand this. I could only get the first like one or two words in. And I'm like, yes. But now, obviously, as I've learned more, it's like now I can understand a lot more. But
and that request of like, hey, use simple words because yes. I only know so much right now.
Right.
You know, even
though
I'm getting better. You
but
know?
Like this is for me personally, I'm like this. And I'm sure many of you have learned other languages. So relatable. But the interactions too were like used for comedic bits, but also like for storyline bits as well. It worked.
It's so relatable, and it's also a real obstacle.
Yeah, for sure. And last thing I want to add that I want to talk to you about: what'd you think of that action with the hand handcuff? It's so graphic yet so grounded in reality. Oh my god, it's incredible how they are able to just viscerally make you like feel like you're really there, and also grounded to the point of it being so intense.
Yeah, and I mean the moments of action we get throughout this episode kind of run that spectrum to me that this show in particular I think is really good at reminding me about, is like, especially in a lot of, again, media that borrows from samurai stories or that type of fighting and things like that. You know, obviously there's a spectrum of things we see, but I feel like oftentimes we portray this stuff with just the grace side of it, where it's like it's a swift motion and then, you know, somebody falls to the ground, whereas here, like, you remember, like, yes, these are swift instruments, you know, swords and knives and bows and arrows, but when they have that sword fight and then she grabs the whatever that weapon is, where it's the staff with the blade on the end,
it's a dagger, but I don't know.
It's but that fight, it's like a great reminder of like, oh yeah, this is like a swift and clean weapon at times, but the rest of the time you are just slashing and poking people and like, yeah, you can effectively slice through bone and tissue, but like also it leaves this just very striking, really painful, kind of personal looking gore. And then you remember like, yeah, this is, I don't know, there's the precision with which everything is carried out. Like, you really just feel the pain. I don't know. It gives you that sort of like phantom painishness.
Yeah. I still have not gotten out of my mind when chosen. Have I?
Yeah.
Okay. Finally I've said it right. Sorry. Can't get chosen out of my head from Cobra Kai and Karate Kid 2. Anyways, I still haven't gotten my mind out with the cannon coming. It's still stuck in my head. Like, again, it's so visceral.
Yeah.
All the hand-to-hand combat in this. And again,
and
they haven't even
done
it.
When he fires the gun, that first time he fires the gun, I was like, oh, shit, that's right. And also, like, you are so used to the sounds of more analog, you know, more hand to hand and sword to sword, blade to blade kind of warfare. So then when things are blowing up, you're like, oh shit, like times are changing immediately around us.
For sure. And that one shot too we got of Yabushige where he's behind the door and you see him doing this stuff. That was so effectively done. A great shot.
So many great beats and moments.
But what an incredible episode. So sad and heartbreaking. I'm poor Mariko. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I loved her so much.
I'm going to be processing. It still hasn't quite hit me. And I know this isn't that kind of show, but part of me is like, well, maybe they'll do the Hollywood thing. Maybe she'll just wake up underneath the door.
I mean, that's there.
And then they'll be like, oh, glad this door was big enough to... Yeah, this door was big enough. You said the heavy door plays for a reason.
I mean, that's three episodes now in a row where we've got quite impactful deaths at the end. We got...
every death, man.
Toranaga's son, Hiromatsu, and then Mariko.
The deaths on this show have been very impactful. Very impactful, and each one gripping, and you know, I'm sure we've been shocked many a time. Like the way this show has managed to again have that kind of stakes where it's like, yeah, anything could happen and no one is like too safe from anything. Like we had that one bit with Buntaro off camera going into the building and eluding those guys, but for the rest of it, you know, like death has been very present and they acknowledge it again here. You know, it's a part of the natural order of things, and it can have meaning and it can have function beyond just, you know, the relief from everything. And yeah, like the characters that have come and gone have, you know, been made, you know, impactful and indelible, at least in my recollection of the show right now, due to the way they handle that. And yeah, I can't say enough about it, really.
Yep.
Well, gang, we got one more to go. Just sit
one more
and reflect
to go.
Yeah, for the next 7 days.
I shall be in therapy for the next rest of my life.
Yeah, you and me both, buddy. Well, hey, you know, leave us the name of a good therapist in the comments below, and we'll catch you next week. But real quick, let's do a Patreon.
John, I shall choose. David Gandhi.
David Gandhi.
Yes.
David Gandhi would be a perfect choice for a show like this because David Gandhi, he's a cultured guy. In fact, I could imagine, you know, David Gandhi being like one of the benevolent hearted missionaries who might come off some kind of trade ship, just looking to spread the good word and take in a new culture. He's a very thoughtful guy. He's got a very calming demeanor. And if there's anything that the people of Shogun could probably use is a little calming demeanor, you know, as tranquil though the society may appear on the surface. But that's the thing. David, he knows how to defend himself when it comes right down to it, but he has also an artful eye. He could probably win a poetry competition if he so chose. And that's part of why we love you. You are well-rounded, and you are a lovely human, and we are graced and blessed to know you. And thanks for being here for so dang long, David!
Thank you so much, David. We appreciate it.
Oh, till next time, buddy. Be well.